we get things underway by welcoming back to the program our friend, the talented actor, author, and storyteller, Stephen Tobolowsky. Hello there, Stephen.
Hey, Rich. Good to be in Maine again.
Great to have you with us. Now, before we came on the air live, I was admiring your Zoom background, which is among the best I've seen here.
One of the best. It not only is, I'm one of the first people at bookcases, but I realize as you get older and older and older, you amass all of this crap. I don't know. Can I say that on the radio?
Sure.
It's like I have all this, like I could show you this thing here, which is pretty amazing. can you see this here?
Yes.
Do you know what this is?
Something in a Ziploc bag. Is it a legal substance?
No, no. Let me pull this out. Can you see this?
Oh, what is that?
It really works on radio when you just have those long pauses. So this is a piece of the Berlin Wall.
Wow. Wow.
When I was 19, I was an exchange student in Berlin. Over the summer, not in Berlin, in Germany as a whole. And our tour was going through Berlin. There they had the wall and they had the East and West Berlin. And so this little busload of American students is crossing at Checkpoint Charlie from West to East. The guy next to me was also from Texas. I was 19. He was 16. His name was Mark. And the East German police get on the bus with the machine guns. And Mark, who was a Texas guy, said, "Get that blanken machine gun out of my face, you blanken commie." Well, apparently, the blanken commie understood enough English to understand that Mark was dissing him. And for some reason, he picked me to come off the bus, too. So he pulled both of us off the bus, put us up against Checkpoint Charlie, the wall at Checkpoint Charlie, had our luggage taken off of the bus, opened up, and they searched our luggage. And then we were told to stand against the wall. The head of our tour bus said that we were there, that they had to pay something like 500 or 600 marks per person in ransom to get us off of the wall. Nobody had the money, so they had to go to the American embassy. Me and Mark stood against the wall. Then it began a thunderstorm. The German guards go inside their little hut at Checkpoint Charlie, get a little vodka and look out at us in the pouring rain with our hands on our heads, up against the wall, our luggage getting drenched, and them like waving at us like, "Hello, how are you?" And then and after a couple of hours, God love them, the bus came back and they paid our ransom and we got off of the wall. And this little bit of wall is a bit of a souvenir of that. Now, I look back at Checkpoint Charlie and it does not look the same. If you were to go back to if you were to look at Checkpoint Charlie today, it's completely different. Then I'm watching the Academy movies a couple years ago. They send us the Academy movies, and there was Tom Hanks in Bridge of Spies.
Oh, right, right.
And I'm watching the movie, and they're going through Checkpoint Charlie, and I say to my wife, Anne, I go, "No, that's it. That's where I was. Steven Spielberg and the art of film recreated the Checkpoint Charlie that I was held up against the wall with the machine gun. There was the red wall. There was the guard tower. Everything was exactly as it was. And I'm screaming, pointing at the screen, saying, Annie, that's it. That's it. This is where this eventually came from." Wow. And so this gets a spot on my wall of crap of things that I have lived through and survived.
Wow.
And it's up there. It's up there on the wall. But this is what art does for you. Art, in a way, can recreate, can give us inspiration, can bring back ghosts from the past. It is the most amazing thing in the world.
That's a story for the podcast down the road. That's wonderful.
It's nuts. It's a crazy thing that happened. It's a crazy thing that happened.
Now, what year was that? Do you remember? Because I spent a big chunk of the summer in Germany, but it was been 1969.
I think we were there very close. I think my summer, I'm guessing right now, I'm thinking was 70.
Okay.
It was, but I think it was 69 or 70 was when I was there.
So apparently I did nothing to loosen the people there up for you.
No, not at all. You didn't help one bit.
No, story of my life, Stephen.
Story
you know
of your
that.
Life.
Well, let's talk about what you're doing. You're headed back to, is it the Sony lot, to shoot more episodes of The Goldbergs?
Yeah, Sony lot Goldbergs, which, of course, I'm always excited to do. And it's always a challenge now in COVID times. I've been signed for 5 more Goldberg shows, and the more the merrier, because it's just, the people are great writers, great directors, and a great cast. You can't beat it. And also, the crew is great. A lot of people say, well, what divides shows, you know, whether they're successful? The crew. You know, the people who work on the Goldbergs are so magnificent. So in COVID times, when you go there, I have to get a COVID test every day to go onto the set. I have to show proof of vaccination. Then they do my makeup and hair either outdoors or alone. And they're all wearing a spacesuit, you know, so they don't get And then after that, I am put in a plexiglass box. They put me in a plexiglass box trailer that has about 6 of these boxes. And so the cast members that are going to be in the scene are placed in these boxes where you're sealed. You are you are like a salmon or something. You are sealed until you're ready to go out and rehearse. And then you rehearse with a mask and a face shield. Then they redo your makeup, and you only go out there with the camera blocking with the face shield, and then you have to take everything off to shoot, and you are so scared.
Wow.
You're like, oh, my God. And I've gotten the question a few times, like, what is it that makes a professional actor? You know, the love of the craft or whatever. What is the skill you have to have? So Wendy and I were on the set doing a Goldbergs. And they ran on and said, there's been a COVID break on the set. Everybody go outside. So we're halfway through this. Go outside. We'll tell you what's going on. So Wendy and I, we go outside. We're all waiting at the Sony lot in the road. And they said, okay, everybody go home. And we will call you tonight individually and tell you what the situation is. And I am scared to death. Mm. And so I go home that night. And then they let me know that one of the stand-ins, who was not on the set at the same time Wendy and I were on the set, one of the stand-ins came up with one of his positive COVID tests that day. So we all went home. They're decontaminating the entire stage. And now Wendy and I are called back 6:30 the next morning, to finish the scene, the comic scene we're doing. So I was telling people that is what a professional actor is. You do half of a comedy scene at 6 o'clock at night. You're told that you may have come down with COVID. Get the hell out of here. And then you're back at 6 the next morning to finish a comedy scene. That's what you have to do to be an actor.
That's I don't think they taught you that in college, did they?
They don't do that in school. They teach you Shakespeare and other stuff that you don't need anymore. Oh, gosh, so sad.
But you're doing, the state of California seems to be doing a little bit better in recent days.
We hope. It's just, this is the sign of the future, I think, or hopefully a sign of the past, Rich. I just did a Grace and Frankie a couple weeks ago.
Oh, nice.
And my scenes were with Lily Tomlin and Sam Waterston. Mm. You know, how could, Jane Fonda was on vacation then, but she had already finished. But I love those people so much. There you have the daily COVID test, but then they give you something like a credit card. It's a computer. It's about as big as like a Black American Express credit card. You probably have one of those, Rich. it's a little thicker than a credit card, but it goes in your pocket. And they said, and the COVID governor says, turn it on. So you turn it on, you put it in your pocket, and it's a contact tracer. So what happens is everybody on the lot, we did this at the Sunset Gower lot, everyone on the lot has these little computers in your pocket. And if you come within 6 feet of someone who has, in their daily COVID test, turned up positive, the people in charge know you have been in contact, and then you said, okay, you've been in contact with someone who's had COVID. And now... So they are tracking you all the time everywhere. So in terms of things getting better, I know the technology is getting more invasive, and it scares you, but it's there at least. You feel like somebody is protecting you. But like the old Jewish saying, if not now, when? You know, you got to go back to work at some point, so now's the time to do it.
Well, that seems to me, I like that technology as opposed to how I spend my days, which is telling high school freshmen, could you please pull that up over your nose? And, well, I have a big nose. It doesn't work. I had a girl the other day. I just got my nose pierced, and it keeps slipping, and it irritates my nose. I said, well, what if you put the ring right through the mask, and that will attach it to your nose? She didn't like that idea.
Oh, gosh. You know, it's just amazing. It's amazing that we're going through this period of time. And it is really just like the old days with the computer when it didn't work anymore. You unplug it from the wall, then you plug it back in again. That's what this has been. It's been an unplug, plug in, and now what's left at the end of the day? And I think, for me, of course, I'm older now. I realize I'm going over the cliff. I'm one of, they said we're only going to deal with people over 65 with the third shot. I'm going, hell, I'm 70. I'm 70 now. And I'm like, oh my gosh. But you realize now, I don't want this to sound as grim as it's going to sound. But before you unplug the computer, what I realized my life was all about is that my legacy is I want to live well. I want to live well. But I realize that the true legacy of happiness is to make sure you die well. And I don't mean this in a grim way. I mean it in a way that you keep your regrets to a minimum. You keep your false dealings with people to zero, hopefully. You come up square with people. You help your children. You help your grandchildren. You get them on the road the right way. And then you're in a perfect – then you realize, oh, I'm really happy now. I don't need the Ferrari. Now, I'll just do this as a sidebar, as an addendum. You know, when I was a kid, when I was in high school, everybody says, oh, man, you can't wait till you drive. Oh, yeah, those Dodges, they're great cars. Oh, get a Camaro. That's great. Oh, I can't wait till I drive. Oh, I can't wait till I have a car. Well, I've had a car my whole damn life. It's miserable. I hate having to drive. I hate having a car. And nobody in my life ever said, you're going to want to be a grandparent, man. You're going to want to stick around and be a grandparent, because that is the greatest thing in the world. And the one thing I want to give out to your audience, if you're not there yet, you want to be around to be a grandparent. That is such joy that I never expected, never anticipated. I was waiting for the Camaro, never got the Camaro, but I did get the grandchild.
That's not a bad deal indeed. We're talking with Stephen Tobolowsky here on Downtown. I know Carrie wanted to ask you, we're talking about some of the things you're working on, and Carrie wanted to ask you about your work in one of his favorites. I'm going to turn the camera so you can see him. There he is.
I've been a watcher of Archer since it started, and I think we're on the 12th season now. So when I tuned in for this 12th season and happened to see you pop up, I was very happy. It sounds like you're having a blast on the show, and your part has been great.
Archer is a terrific show. It's absolutely hilarious. The scripts are wonderful. Of course, even in COVID times, nobody is with me at all in a studio. If anything, in the beginning of the pandemic, we would do things like we're doing now.
Right.
You know, I'm in this studio, you're in that studio. But the whole Archer thing came about was I was in Finland. I was in Finland, and I had to come back to Austin, Texas, for a one day at a time producers kind of showcase for new shows that were coming out this year. And they were all meeting in Austin, Texas. So I fly from Helsinki to Austin, and there is a flight that goes from Helsinki to Austin. And you watch a lot of movies on that flight because it's not that big of a plane. I get to Austin and I'm headed for the hotel, And crossing the street, this man came up to me and said, "Oh, excuse me, I'm Matt Thompson. I'm one of the executive producers of Archer. Would you like to be on the show, Archer? We were thinking about having a part that's based on you for Archer." And I'm crossing the street and I'm going, "Well, hell yes. I would love to be on Archer. That would be absolutely great." He says, "That's great, but could you do a favor for me?" And I said, "Sure." He says, "Well, I'm trying to get one of my projects to some of the people involved with One Day at a Time." And just at that time, Mike Royce, our executive producer at One Day at a Time, is crossing the street in Austin, Texas. And I go, "Matt, here he is. Here's Mike Royce from One Day at a Time. You guys talk, and yes, I'll do Archer." Oh, and wow. That's how it happens in show business. It's all about leaving Helsinki at the right time.
I have to ask you about this. Of all the times you've been on, Stephen, I don't think I've ever asked you about one of my favorite movies, which I happened to catch on cable a couple of weeks ago. Can you tell us a little bit about the experience of making Sneakers?
Oh, God. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, I was insulted when I got the script of Sneakers. I was insulted because I figured, like, why are they giving me this junk, this movie called Sneakers? You know, I thought it was like some dopey kid movie, you know, that would be on Kid Disney Hour or something. So I read the script and I'm absolutely blown out of the water as to how brilliant the script is. I go in and meet Phil Alden Robinson, the director, and I go, "This script is amazing." I read this, I did it. And what Phil told me was in that movie, he says, "Well, Mary McDonald, who I do most of my scenes with."
Right.
He says, "You know, she's a bit uptight, you know. So if you want to do anything to kind of upset her in any way at all, please do that." And so throughout all of our shooting, I just threw in the kitchen sink in any of those scenes, whether it was putting in my contacts at the table or showing her, you know, chopping up the vegetable, saying the healthiest meal is the bottom of a monkey cage. None of that was in a script. You know, "You want to see the bottom of a monkey cage, you know, and now I'm going to pound these breasts. You want to help me pound the breasts, you know, for, you know," anything I could to make her laugh. I ended up at the first reading, I'm going back, the first reading, I'm sitting there next to Sidney Poitier, Robert Redford, River Phoenix, David Strathairn. I'm looking around, I'm going like, "Oh my God, James Earl Jones. This is the greatest cast ever assembled." And one of the funniest moments I had on shooting, first of all, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And later when I did Broadway, I did Mornings at 7. Phil came with Carol King. Phil Alden Robinson came with Carol King, and they came backstage. They saw the play, and they came back to say hello, and they both loved it. Anyway, the funniest moment I had, besides Ben Kingsley, the funniest man on earth.
Really?
You would not believe he is, but this guy is filled with the funniest stories in the world. Just imagine next time you see him, he is filled with the funniest stories of him doing Shakespeare and stuff in the provinces. But we are on the Universal lot and we're shooting some of Sneakers. And you know, they have these trams going around with tourists.
Right.
And they have this jive that they do. "And over here is the shark from Jaws. That's Bruce, the shark from Jaws. If you look over here, there's the car from Columbo. Oh my goodness. And there's E.T.'s bicycle." And everybody's taking pictures of everything. Well, Robert Redford and James Earl Jones's trailer were across the road. And so we're all called to the set to do a scene. So I come down and I see James Earl Jones, who I had worked with before in Thailand, and I'm waving at him, and he and Robert Redford are coming, and the van is coming in between us. And the guy is doing his patter, and "Over here is the Bruce, the shark from Jaws," and they have to stop for James Earl Jones and Robert Redford to walk in front of the tram. But the guy keeps doing his patter. And he goes, oh, my goodness, and there's the bicycle from E.T. And all the people are on the bus taking pictures. This is before the age of the little phones. They're taking their snapshots of all these stupid sights when two of the biggest stars in the world are walking in front of the trolley. It was the funniest thing I ever saw. And it was just, but it was, that was a great shoot from beginning to end. We loved it all. And I remember I said to my agents when I was working on it, I go like, now I know what $100 million feels like. That's what, and that was back in the time when $100 million meant something in movies.
Right.
Magnificent film. Great, great, great film.
One of those that every time it comes on, I'm 2 hours right there. I will not turn away because I love that movie.
It's magnificent. It's magnificent. And you know, there is a book on how to write screenplays. There's a book on how to write screenplays, and Sneakers violates the primary rules of writing screenplays. And I said to Phil, and of course, you know, I know, everyone who's seen it, it is one of the greatest screenplays ever. And I said, Phil, you wrote the screenplay of Sneakers. He goes, yeah. I said, how is it so great? And why were you able to violate the primary rule of screenplays? And he said, because, Stephen, it took me 9 years to write it. And we shot three versions of it. We shot we did the version of the screenplay with just what you need to have to follow the plot. And then we had the version of the screenplay where everything's in it that we wanted. And then we had the version of the screenplay where just we're going to do both. And that's what we ended up filming. Wow. And we knew everything would work because and the primary rule of screenplays is you can't change the rules in the middle of the script. And damn it, they do. They really do. Big time.
I love it.
So if you haven't seen it, see it. It's Absolutely. Very enjoyable.
But before we let you go, you look great. It looks like you, again, are one of the few people to lose weight during COVID. Is it still because you're living off what Anne is growing in the garden?
Well, that and dark gin. I start drinking gin. I think what it is the true answer to your question is probably yes, in that we don't go to restaurants or anything, so I'm not eating the basket of bread before I eat. Everything we do, Anne makes bread here. She makes cinnamon rolls here. She's cooking dinner right now. And I just eat better and I eat less. And I do drink that gin starting about 4 o'clock this afternoon. That was, and the dark gin from Finland, it really is magnificent. It just takes the weight right off.
All right. We may have to shift that, make that our new studio drink instead of the wine we have when you're here.
Right.
Well, Stephen, it is wonderful to catch up with you. It's a busy time for you. So thanks so much for making time for us this afternoon. And we wish you well. Stay safe out there.
Thank you, sir. And the same to you.
All right. Stephen Tobolowsky with us here on Downtown.